ladies and gentlemen. It's the show that celebrates WWE. It's Gorilla Position.
Hello, you, and welcome to Gorilla Position. Thank you very much for hitting the download button on this, your pro wrestling / sports entertainment podcast of pleasure. My name is James D'Lo, your host and your guide through the wonderful world of WWE. It is Monday, 23rd of November, 2020. And thank you for tuning into this episode number 295 of the biggest and best WWE podcast in the UK, the only show of its kind to be supported, endorsed, and promoted by WWE themselves. So here we are, the day after the night before. Survivor Series 2020 is in the can. It's done. It's over. We have said farewell to the dead man. It's happened. And now we're going to talk all about it. And to do it with me, he's a Strictly Come Dancing champion. He's a WWE lifer. He, like me, I assume, is very tired because he stayed up till 3:30 in the morning to watch the show. Mr. Kevin Clifton. You all right, my Kevs?
What up, Poos?
What up, Poos? How are you feeling today? Tired?
Yeah, tired because I had to be up to do... I was on this morning with Philip and Holly.
All right, hold on. Let me just pick up the names you just dropped.
Yeah. Phil and Holmes, as I call them.
I can't believe you stayed up for a pay per view and then had to do breakfast television.
Yeah. So, I was like, normally I'd be like, no, nah, I'm gonna go to bed and watch it tomorrow. But I just thought if there was, we had Drew and Roman, and we had Undertaker retiring, I just thought if something major happens, something big happens, there'll be some big news, I don't want to see it on Twitter before I see it.
So
I thought, nah, I'm staying up to watch it, and then just had to be quite tired talking to Phil and Ollie.
and we all know because of the GP WhatsApp group how expectation levels were sort of going through the roof as we got closer and closer to the pay-per-view. And Tom Fordy, I remember, said something incredibly funny. Like, we were talking about the possible people who would come and interrupt Taker and then set up a match for WrestleMania. And I'm just looking at it now. And then Tom replied saying, I think you boys need to manage your expectations. Start at Elias gets a choke slam and work your way down.
Yeah. I was getting very carried away. It was really weird. You know, like 2 weeks ago, we were saying on the podcast, I was like, this feels like one of them Saudi shows. It's more of an interruption than a big pay-per-view that I'm really looking forward to. The feuds haven't been built that much because they're on different brands and blah, blah, blah. And then by the time it came around, I couldn't have been more excited for it. I woke up yesterday and immediately started thinking about it. And it was all I could think about all day. I had this weird, like, obsessive day about it. And I had my Drew McIntyre t-shirt on all day. And I was thinking about all the possibilities of, you know, a last match for The Undertaker. And what I started to get in my head was, what I hadn't thought about enough was the fact that they could do a cinematic match, you know, like the Boneyard match.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be a case of like, oh, we don't want to see it because he can't go anymore. Because if it's a cinematic match, they can take their time over it and deliver whatever they want to deliver. So then once I got that in my head, I was like, it could, because they can do that, it could literally be anyone. Like, they could do it with Sting, or it could be Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, imagine the glass breaks whilst Undertaker's mid-retirement. And, you know, it could be anyone. Like, it doesn't have to be someone that can go and get a match out of him. So my head started to spin with all of that, and I started putting it all in the WhatsApp group. What if it was this? What if it was that? What if it really is Taker and Sting at Mania, or Taker versus The Fiend, or whether it's Taker versus Stone Cold Steve Austin? Imagine it's Roman versus The Rock and Taker versus Austin at Mania. Oh, my God. And then literally I was getting so carried away.
And then what we got was Henry Godwin and Savio Vega.
And they didn't even do anything. They just got announced to the ring, and then we saw the video package, and then they weren't there anymore.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's work our way through the card. But I know exactly what you mean. We have been very down on creative when it comes to Survivor Series, and the fact that so many of the matches were a bit meaningless. But still, on that Sunday afternoon, when you're heading into a pay-per-view, what WWE has all the time is just that excitement around the possibilities. What could they possibly do? And it's a dangerous thing to fantasy book, but it's all part of the fun, right?
Yeah, like you can't help yourself, can you? Like you just can't help it. It's suddenly pay-per-view day. And especially if it's a big pay-per-view, like Survivor Series is one of the big ones. So, and the fact that it was The Undertaker, like, I don't know, it was just, it sent me into an absolute spin. And then, like, the other goosebumps were, like, just, you know, don't do it to yourself, because you're only going to be disappointed if you carry on like this. And I was like, I know, I get it. I need to calm down. I need to have a drink of water and just have a little sit.
but it's because we know when you get a huge surprise moment, or when, you know, something really unexpected happens, when you get, I mean, it's difficult in the virtual world, but when you get that pop from the crowd and an amazing moment in WWE, it is unlike anything else. And that's why I think we get overexcited by it, because, yeah, you know, just the possibility of those fun things happening, it's always special. But let's talk about the show, Survivor Series 2020, in the history books now. The kickoff show hosted by Charlie Caruso, Booker T, Jerry Lawler, JBL and Pete Rosenberg. It was fine. They played this incredible Undertaker package, which they then repeated during the segment where he retired at the end of the show. But they played it on the kickoff show as well. And it was one of the best promo packages I can remember seeing in WWE for a long, long time. They managed to encapsulate 30 years of memories in about 3 minutes, and it was so well done. I thought, just so beautifully edited, and the music, and astonishing.
Yeah, like they're always good, aren't they, the promo packages? They're always amazing, and there's so much stuff there.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. There's so much stuff, and I just, from an editor or a producer's point of view, you would look at it and think, "Oh God, this is a mountain to climb. How do we even begin to piece together the story of the Undertaker over 30 years?" Like, you know, it was just incredible. Really, really well done. Sami Zayn was on the kickoff show, being his usual brilliant self, almost got into a bit of US politics with JBL, which could have been fairly awkward. But he is a one-of-a-kind talent, honestly, Sami Zayn. Every time he has a mic, he delivers. Very, very good stuff.
Sammy. Yeah. I love Sami. I can listen. He's always got something to say. You always feel like he means it. Totally committed to what he's doing, saying, yeah, he's great.
JBL called R-Truth R-Trizzle, which made me laugh. But then the gobbledygooker on the 30th anniversary of his debut, cracking out of the egg at Survivor Series 1990, he became the 24/7 champion. Utterly stupid. And I know we don't really cover the 24/7 championship on the show, but as stupid as it was, it was a nice idea that gobbledygooker won a championship 30 years on.
It's just like, I had the kickoff show on, but I had the volume down because so Stace, my girlfriend, was out working for the last couple of days, like on location, and so I hadn't seen her in a couple of days, and she, like, I don't hear from her most of the day, and then she FaceTimed me, and I was like, okay, this is the only bit I'm going to get to actually speak to her. So I was speaking to Stace, and I had the kickoff show on my TV, but with the volume down, and I just saw suddenly, obviously it's a massive chicken, you know, winning the 24/7 title off of R-Trizzle, and all I could think of was like, I'm so glad Stace isn't here right now to witness what I'm watching.
Yeah, exactly. It's that classic moment, isn't it? You just don't want anyone to walk in the room because how do I explain this?
Yeah, when you're like, no, if you understand it, wrestling's really cool and really interesting. It's just because you're not into it and you're not invested and blah, 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 blah. When you understand it, like we understand it, it's so amazing, blah, blah. And then like they walk in, there's a chicken losing a title to R-Truth because of some chicken feed or...
Good Lord. It's... Surely it's a turkey.
Thanks. Maybe it's a turkey.
Thanks,
yeah.
Thanksgiving turkey, I'm sure.
Perhaps I haven't given it as much thought as I should have done.
Either way, it's poultry. It's poultry winning the 24/7 championship. The Miz wins a dual-branded battle royal on the kickoff show. I don't know if you picked up on this or saw much of this match, but the most exciting part for me was seeing a glimpse of what Chad Gable and Dominic Mysterio could do somewhere down the road.
Yeah, like I said, I had it on with the volume down as I was talking to Stace, but I was sort of had one eye on it and I did notice that Gable was getting a lot of action. I'd like to see a push for Gable. I think we've been waiting for it for a while. I mean, Dominic, it's coming anyway, and he's sort of already had a bit of a push, I guess. But with Gable, I feel like it's always threatening to be something great, and then they never quite pull the trigger on him. But I'd like to see a lot more of him.
Yeah, 100%. And he's back in sort of the old school gear that he used to wear when he was with Jason Jordan. And just the change of name and everything, and just seeing how smooth him and Dominic were, just for those few little spots, those few little sequences within the match, I thought, oh, now that is a feud I could really get invested in somewhere down the line. So, main show of Survivor Series, it kicks off with... I mean, another brilliant video package highlighting, you know, the best of the best, Raw versus SmackDown. No NXT, sadly, which we'll talk about a bit later. That, and then obviously The Undertaker's retirement, incredible promo package as always. And then the main show kicked off with Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. So we had on Raw side AJ Styles, Keith Lee, who has new music. It's not great, but it's 10 times better than it was. Sheamus, Braun Strowman, and Riddle versus Team SmackDown, which was obviously Kevin Owens, Jey Uso, and I love that Paul Heyman was watching on from backstage. That was a nice touch. King Corbin, Seth Rollins, and Bushwhacker Otis. I don't know if you noticed during Otis's entrance, he looked like one of the Bushwhackers walking down the ramp. What did you think of this opening match?
The first thing I noticed was I was looking at the Raw team and I was going, 2 months ago, were any of these on Raw?
Well, yeah, exactly.
They were all SmackDown or NXT like 2 months ago. So, we've talked about that, you know, the issues going in and whether it actually matters in terms of what brand you're on and all of that. The issue as a whole for me with the paper, like there's loads of good action in every match. They're all so talented and I love watching the action from an in-ring point of view. I suppose the problem as a whole for me in connecting to it last night was that until we got to the last couple of matches, I sort of didn't really care who won. Like it didn't matter to me. Like, obviously I'm not on Team Raw or Team SmackDown. I watch and enjoy both of them. So it didn't matter to me who won out of them two. The tag titles were two babyface teams against each other. The IC title and US title were two heels against each other, but two sort of cool heels that we quite like because Hurt Business and Sammy. The women's title was two faces against each other. And then you've got the women's elimination again, Raw versus SmackDown. I like Raw and SmackDown. So it wasn't until we got to Drew versus Roman that we actually had a babyface guy that we're really behind in Drew McIntyre against an evil heel that we want to see get punched in the face. So I suppose in the women's match, there's Lana, but we can talk about that in a bit. But so I guess I was enjoying all the action, but none of it seemed important until near the end of the pay-per-view. So I didn't really mind who won this elimination match.
Yeah, it's well. Yeah. It was a point I was going to raise because you and I were texting about it during the actual show. We were exchanging some texts about how just we're not hugely invested in a lot of this stuff. And as you say, two baby faces, two heels, whatever it is. But I think it's like the sort of the counterpart title holders on each brand are essentially the equivalent of each other. So, you know, the IC title on one brand, US title on the other, they play the same role effectively, the tag team titles too, obviously. So it's like when they're playing the same role, filling that part on their respective shows, you're obviously going to get a lot of heel versus heel and face versus face scenarios. And that is one of the big issues, I think, with Survivor Series at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
And also, unless I missed it, unless I just sort of looked down or whatever each time they did it, I don't think they were keeping score. Anyway, you know, like last year when NXT were there was like a score. It was like Raw's got one win, SmackDown's on two, and NXT's on three or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't think they were even keeping score last night. So the whole thing is this brand supremacy. Who everyone's fighting for brand supremacy. Who's the best of the best? But they, you know, it's not like we were keeping score anymore, like was the thing with Survivor Series. So I don't know what the final score was last night between Raw and SmackDown.
No, well, it
wasn't
just
really a thing.
It just wasn't a big deal. And I think as much as we were probably slagging off the brand supremacy stuff this time last year, at least on the night they made it feel important.
And NXT got the win, right, last year?
I think so.
It felt like... God, NXT's come up and beaten Raw and SmackDown. And also there was the storyline that Raw got trounced. Yeah. Like Raw took a beating, and which led to...
Kicked off Seth Rollins.
Seth Rollins giving that talk the next day on Raw and being like, you know, this is out of order. I'm going to lead you into the next... And that which was the whole development of him being the Messiah character.
Yeah.
So it had some sort of narrative that went with it, whereas here it didn't seem to matter.
Yeah, well, that's sort of, you've hit the nail on the head, really, with regards to most of the pay-per-view. It didn't really matter, and I don't mean that to be negative, but it's just, you know, it's sort of forgettable stuff. There was lots of good action, but in the grand scheme of things, it didn't really matter. And just imagine, and we don't know the reasons why they weren't involved, but imagine if NXT were part of this show. Like, I think you mentioned last night, Io Shirai being in there with Sasha and Asuka, how much would that have lifted that match?
Yeah.
McAfee bringing down his boys for the tag team match. It would have injected a bit more energy into it, because I feel like we've got a lot of repeated matches last night that we've seen a lot before.
Yeah. But in terms of this match in particular, the men's elimination one, what was Seth doing?
So, I mean, he was completely no-selling the match for the first few minutes. And then, for the greater good, he drops to his knees and allows Sheamus to kick his head off, and he gets pinned. And I half understood it, but then on the other side of the coin, I didn't understand it at all. And also, the note that I've actually made is this, it kind of made the match seem even less important than it did going in.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Seth obviously has, like, I'm sure we'll hear from him on SmackDown. We'll hear a reason for it, and there'll be some sort of story that goes with it. But Seth's greater good is more important than SmackDown winning at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. Overall, this match was kind of enjoyable. But the one thing we've been saying for the last 3 weeks is, the brand supremacy stuff doesn't mean anything, bit rubbish. However, we know the action is going to be superb, because in these matches, they generally tend to be. But I wasn't blown away by this one, I've got to say. And I know it was only the opening match of the show, and they've got to set the right pace for the pay-per-view, and the pay-per-view's got to build and build to a crescendo. There was a lot of this match I didn't really like. I thought Otis and Keith Lee's exchanges were built up a lot by the commentators, you know, these two heavyweights. But actually, I thought the back and forth between those two was a bit sloppy and a bit pedestrian. It never really fired on all cylinders, this match, like I was expecting it to.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I can only I suppose the three things just off the top of my head that I can really remember about it was Seth just sacrificing himself.
Yeah.
I can't remember who, but someone jumped off the turnbuckle onto Keith Lee's shoulders, which was quite cool.
Yeah.
He just caught him on his shoulders, like, perfectly. And what was the third? Oh, yeah. I remember thinking that the third bit when there was only Jay left, I remembered thinking, okay, there's some story coming here because it's Jay.
Yeah.
And Paul Heyman was watching. I was like, what's gonna happen now? This is, and it was like, you know, the SmackDown were getting killed. So something is gonna happen now. But then Jay still just lost.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, okay. And then I did think after that, okay, then there's gonna be consequences for that for Jay, which means he's gonna cost Drew later on. That's, I sort of immediately thought that. But yeah, it's like they're all great, but that's how I feel about it, really. Like, they're all great, and I enjoy watching them all, but not hugely invested.
Yeah, I totally agree. Kevin Owens, he managed to stunner most of Team Raw, only to be hit by AJ's phenomenal forearm, so he got eliminated. Riddle eliminates Corbin pretty easily. Otis then gets eliminated after Braun Strowman's running power slam. And then Jey Uso, as you say, last man standing. You know, the story being, can he take down the entire Raw team? It's super kick central. Heyman watching nervously backstage. And I thought, what a way to make Jay look really strong. He's attacking and he's going after them. He's looking great, but it only lasted for about a minute. And as you say, when it's Jay, you think there's going to be a lot of story here. And the match is going to somehow sort of progress into something bigger, but it just never really did. AJ gets a quick unseen tag to Keith Lee, who catches Jay midair off the splash, and then Lee hits him with a spirit bomb for the victory. So it was a clean sweep for Raw, but literally who cares? Like, and I have to say, there was hardly any sort of social engagement on the GP account around this match. I didn't really feel like I had a lot to say about it on the night on Twitter. It was very good action, but it mattered not.
Yeah. Only other thing I thought was that Braun Strowman looked in great shape.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal shape. Absolutely phenomenal.
Because we've always just seen him as a big lad, but actually he's like a big muscly lad now.
Have you seen the WrestleMania 36, 24 episode?
No.
I suggest you watch that, because I mean, it's all about how on earth WWE going to put on WrestleMania when they're suddenly forced into an empty performance center. So just from that side of things, it's a fascinating show. But there are some lovely interviews with Braun Strowman, because obviously he wins his championship from Bill Goldberg as Roman Reigns last minute replacement. But he talks about his size and being bullied as a kid, and it's really, really emotional, and he comes across so well. So I suggest you watch it. It's a really good show. And actually, shout out to WWE and all the producers over there in Stanford. The stuff on the network around Undertaker Week, the Brothers of Destruction, the Paul Bearer documentary, the second podcast he did with Steve Austin, which I haven't watched in full yet. There was another one as well. What was it? It was
like when they all first met him and stuff.
Yeah. And there was Undertaker breaking down lots of different matches he's had. There's been so much brilliant content on the network, and that sounds like a real shill moment, but some great shows on there. So check it out if you haven't done so already. So next up, we had The New Day, Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, obvs, Raw Tag Champs. Wearing amazing, amazing Gears of War.
So cool.
Entrance stuff. Oh, I mean, like, the best outfit I've ever seen any wrestler wear. It's so incredible.
They looked amazing coming out in them outfits.
So, so good. Very, very cool.
With Big E as well.
Yeah, with Big E, which I saw some, like, I watched it and I thought, oh, that's cool. The three of them together. Yeah. I'd sort of thought nothing more of it. Whereas a lot of people on social were being very negative, going, well, they've just split up. It's, you know, they're meant to be on different brands.
To me, it makes sense, because this is a cross-brand pay-per-view where they're all sort of there competing against each other. So, like, you know, in the kayfabe of what's happening in the story, on a Monday night, there's those wrestlers there, and on a Friday night, there's those wrestlers there. But at Survivor Series, they're all there, and they're still mates, A New Day. They didn't break up, like, because of a feud. So it makes perfect sense that Big E would come out with them, because yeah. They're his mate.
Yeah, exactly, and they're all there together, so why not?
Yeah.
And also, they're obviously doing some sort of sponsorship with this game. So if you've got the three talents doing social posts about their gear, it's better than two. So, people shouldn't overthink it, really. But anyway, New Day versus Street Profits, Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford, the SmackDown Tag Champs. I thought this was really good. Like, really, really good. It was great energy, fast-paced, nice aggression from New Day. Angelo Dawkins really impressed me in this one, actually. I thought he was looking great. Yeah. There was lots of comparisons made between Kofi and Montez Ford. The commentators told a nice story. There was a moment where Kofi took down Montez Ford, and the commentators were like, it's like Kofi saying, not yet, young man, not yet. And Montez Ford hit the Trouble in Paradise on Kofi at one point. And I thought, these comparisons between Ford and Kingston, they were by design. WWE has like frog splash high hopes for Montez Ford. And I thought it told a really good story, this match. It was a big win for Street Profits. The action was great. And it just felt to me like a bit of a coming out party for them. It felt like an important victory for those two.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Yeah, because again, I didn't mind who won because I love both of these teams. So I wasn't like really behind one of them. But yeah, you're right. They did a really good job of. Yeah, I can't put my finger on it, but it was a nice night for the Street Profits. They did a great promo before the match as well. They were like really hyped and then came out and it made them look really good. And I think they're. What's the word I'm looking for? Like their stock has risen.
Their stock
has risen after last night, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it really felt like an important match, and I know Street Profits have been in a lot of really high quality matches this year. I mean, probably too many with the likes of, you know, Andrade and Angel Garza and people like that, but. You know, they're great. They have been consistently very, very good in ring. But there was something about last night that I thought was a bit special. And maybe it's just because it was a good, clean victory over New Day, who WWE, you know, hold high on a pedestal. But yeah, I was really pleased with this one. And for me, it was second best match of the night, without question.
Yeah, it was really good, yeah.
Third match, Bobby Lashley, the Raw's United States champion versus Sami Zayn, Smackers IC champ, heel versus heel, as we said. Unless we're calling Hurt Business babyfaces now, I'm not really sure.
I'm not sure. I keep, after the whole Retribution thing, it seemed like they were faces, but then they keep sort of being a bit bullying towards certain people, like, you know, towards the likes of Ricochet or when, what's his name? What's his name that falls under the ring?
Titus O'Neil.
Titus O'Neil. Like when he wanted to join Hurt Business and they just sort of laughed at him and beat him up. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're being heelish towards faces still.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure where they're supposed to sit, but I like them. Like I find myself cheering them on.
Yeah, I do. And there was a thing made of the fact that they didn't physically get involved at all with Sami Zayn. You know, they never touched him. They were all on the outside of the ring, but they never got involved. Sami was great. He was complaining that he had vertigo after an extended suplex, which made me laugh. I mean, he was thrown around from pillar to post by Bobby Lashley. He tried to retreat a few times. Comically, he tried to get a DQ victory after he tripped over MVP's foot on the walk up the aisle. And I thought it was really good, but there was part of me that was thinking, oh, is this turning into sort of too much comedy for Sammy?
Yeah.
Like, I know how funny he is, but I also want big things for him. And I just, it felt like this... It felt like he was a bit of a jobber to Bobby Lashley last night, and then he tapped out quickly to the Hurt Lock. I don't know. As great a performer as he was at Survivor Series, I felt like I want more from Sami Zayn.
I feel, I don't know, maybe I'm doing an injustice to someone like Mustafa Ali, but I wonder if like Sami had been made the head of the leader of something like Retribution, what he could have done with it in terms of promos and giving it meaning. Like he's that kind of character, isn't he? Like he talks a lot, like when you hear him on podcasts or him on social media, he's very sort of, he speaks out against things and against sort of injustices. And I wonder if that would have fit him better, maybe. But yeah, this match, like I say, it was two cool heels, two heels that we like to sort of cheer on. Some nice moments, but then eventually Sammy just taps out to Lashley. It was fine. It was fine. Do you know what I mean? Like I like them both, but I wasn't like, again, I wasn't hugely invested somehow.
I think my biggest problem with it is, to sort of articulate what I was trying to say before, I think I don't mind Sammy losing to Bobby Lashley. That's fine. Oh. But I just don't think the match did anything for him.
Yeah.
You know,
no one's out of it looking better.
No, he wasn't elevated in any way whatsoever. If anything, he was treated like a bit of a jobber. And that I don't like when it comes to someone as talented as Sami Zayn.
Yeah. And the Intercontinental Championship as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You're listening to the number one WWE podcast. It's Gorilla Position.
Roman Reigns backstage, him with Jay and Jimmy and Paul Heyman. And so he was saying, so Jay was saying, you know, it was 5-on-1. You know, I didn't stand a chance. Like I was 5-on-1. I'm sorry. Yeah. And Roman was like, you lost because you couldn't control your team. And you couldn't control your team because they don't fear you.
Yeah.
They don't respect you. And if they don't respect you, they don't respect me. And if they don't respect me, they disrespect our entire family. I love the way Roman just always brings it back to him and the family. And he tells Jay to go out with Jimmy, leave his arena. He doesn't have any time for losers, not tonight. But I thought really, really good exchange between Jay and Roman.
He's just the Don, isn't he, Roman? Even in that bit on SmackDown in the build-up, like when he was head of the table for the contract signing.
So good.
Dick. Like, and it's the way he was looking at Drew and going, like, you know, you're going to look back on this and you're going to thank me. Mm. You're going to look back on your career in years to come and you're going to thank me for these moments and for what you've learned from me and for what it's done for you. You know, like you're going to be there one day. But right now, you're a very, very good number two. And I was just, this is wonderful. It proves like with someone who's a masterful storyteller like that, you don't have to just go out and go, we will crush you, you know, like shouting into a microphone.
Yeah. I thought SmackDown was so good, that segment between the two, just not even needing microphones,
no,
just talking, and Roman going, I knew you could do it. Paul not so much, but I knew you could do it. Like so layered, it's so good. He's just doing phenomenal work, which of course we will talk about at length when we talk about the main event. Asuka, Raw Women's Champ versus Sasha Banks, the SmackDown Women's Champ. My notes say it was fine. I thought it was good. It was a good match. It was okay. I just thought it was completely forgettable and no fault of their own. Just literally nothing to care about here. It was a loss to add into the mix of Asuka's utterly forgettable title reign so far. I mean, if this loss helps Asuka transition into something fresh and changes up her character a bit, you know, if she uses this loss to propel her to something new, then great. But I have my doubts. I couldn't get on board for this one. And, you know, no negatives about the action. It was some good action, good back and forths. Yeah, they're really good. But just, for me, utterly forgettable.
That's the thing. I know we talk about it a lot. Like, they're great wrestlers. I adore them both. Asuka and Sasha are so amazing in the ring. And some of the smoothness of what they were doing, a bit like you were talking about Gable and Dominic, like the smoothness of some of their, you know, of some of their work was really great to watch. But that's not why we watch it.
No.
Do you know what I mean? That's not why that. Well, me anyway. I can only talk for me. That's not why I watch wrestling. Like, because otherwise you just watch. You know, I don't watch it for a technical masterclass. You want them to be brilliant like that, but you watch it for the way it makes you feel and the way it will tell you a story. And that was the only thing with this. Like, there are two incredible wrestlers in the ring, but there wasn't a huge amount of sort of beef or story going in. I know there's a story about Sasha's never had a win over Asuka, and now she has. So that's good. That's good for Sasha, I suppose. It's making her look a bit stronger now as a champion. Because before it was like she never hangs on to the title. You know, she always loses it straight away. But now she's defending the title and she's beaten Asuka, who she doesn't normally beat. So I suppose it's making Sasha look strong, which I am all for because I love Sasha Banks. Like you said, I hope that this will provoke something new out of Asuka now, because I think she's amazing. I love her in the ring. I'm not hugely keen on her, like, as a promo now. I'm slightly bored of it. Like, before it was sort of funny that she was just nuts and she was shouting things and you didn't understand what she was saying or what she was going on about, and there'd be the odd English word here and there, and she's just a bit nuts, and it was sort of funny. But now I just feel like it's just that over and over again a little bit. It's just, and you're not ready. You're not the boss of me. Not ready for Asuka. Do you know what I mean? And I sort of, I'm like, all right, but you're not telling me anything. And they're not giving her much story to play with. So there's not much to cling on to. It's just Asuka being good in the ring, but we know that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. This loss for me has to spark something, because actually I look across this entire year, since May, the night after Money in the Bank, when Asuka was handed the title from Becky Lynch, I can't remember anything she's done in her title reign. I honestly can't.
And it's
because there's been nothing of meaning. There's been no meaningful feuds. It's been an absolute afterthought. So something needs to change with Asuka pretty quickly, because she's just, don't know. What is she? Who is she? Team Raw, the women's side, Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler, Lana, Lacey Evans, and Peyton Royce take on Team SmackDown, Bianca Belair, Ruby Riott, Liv Morgan, Bayley, and Natalya, who, by the way, finally qualified after inexplicably getting three chances across 3 weeks of TV. Not sure what happened there. Lana gets tagged in here and actually wrestles really well. Like, there's some few good sequences that she does in this match. And then she is told to stand on the steps by Nia and the rest of the Raw team. So she's left out in the cold. Digby, shush. sorry. Digby's a big fan of Nala. Digby, shush. God, someone's let him out into the garden. Annoying. But you know, she's told to stand on the steps. And for me, this added some much needed emotion into another brand supremacy match that didn't mean a lot. Whether you love her or hate her, whether you agree or disagree with the fact that Lana is being pushed and, you know, there's a big storyline revolving around her when, as we've just identified, nothing is really happening with Asuka. Yes, as mental as that sounds, at least they're doing something with this girl, and at least it added a storyline into this match.
Well, this is the thing. I really enjoyed this match. This was the first point of the night where I actually cared about who was going to win or not.
Yeah.
All the other matches before it, I wasn't invested in who's going to win this match. Like, because I was okay with whoever won. With this one, they gave me a reason to care, because suddenly when that happened and she was ordered to stay on the steps, it was like Lana was being bullied. And I think she played it really well. And there was the bit earlier in the night where they were all in a little Mean Girls pack together and she was left out, you know, backstage. She was sort of to the side of them and they weren't even letting her into the conversation.
Yeah.
Suddenly, like, it's simple storytelling, but suddenly you felt for Lana and you didn't want her to be bullied like that and left out because she's really trying her best. And it's sort of wrestling 101, but like, it made me care because suddenly, like, now she's on the steps and I wanted her to get in the ring and I wanted her to win the match. Like, I was begging for her to be the last survivor of the match, which obviously is what happened. It was funny, the ending, that they both got counted out and left her there. So she won just by default because she was stood on the steps.
Yeah.
It was funny, but I do wish that they'd just gone the extra bit for her and let her get the pin to win. Like, that she would have earned it. That Nia would have got counted out and then she would have dived in and hit some sort of finisher on Bianca Belair and pinned her. Like, that would have just finished it off for me, because it would have meant, like, it would have been a really lovely moment for Lana.
Yeah, I think it's tricky because you don't want to have Lana pinning someone like Bianca Belair.
Mm.
Because Bianca is a superstar. She's got an incredible future in WWE. Everyone recognizes her as sort of being the future of the division. You know, she's that good. And if she was pinned by Lana, would that take a lot of shine from Bianca Belair? Probably. So I understand you don't want that to happen. But I do agree, there should have been something within the match where fans could watch it and think, oh, well, she deserved it. You know, she didn't just stand there and get a lucky victory. She did something to deserve it. And yeah, she wrestled well for a couple of minutes early on in the match. But I think there should have been another point where people could go, okay, yeah, that was just, you know, that was fair.
Or at least if that's the ending that they wanted to go with, which obviously it was, where she just wins by default, stood on the steps. And Nia was really angry at that point. I'm thinking, well, why didn't Nia put her through the table again then?
Well, I think, I mean, the follow-up is always really important. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight on Raw. But what I think you need now is Nia Jax not only putting Lana through a table for being the sole survivor and taking her frustrations out on Lana, but then I think it needs to go to the next step. She then, after she's put her through the table, needs to beat her down. Like, viciously. So we get that sympathy. We start getting a lot of sympathy on Lana. And then we really want to see Lana get her revenge. Because ultimately, this is all leading to Lana hopefully putting Nia through a table and getting a big victory over Nia. But I just think it needs to take that next step now. And I think you don't want any more cases of Lana being lucky and sort of scraping through and getting a victory through not putting in the hard work. The fans need to see, from a storyline perspective, the fans need to see that Lana is working hard and absolutely doing her best and is trying to be the best she can be. But at the end of the day, listen, we're talking about it and it's interesting us. So they're doing something right.
I actually really enjoyed the match. I thought it was like well put together and it was interesting the whole time. I love that bit where Bianca and Natalia were doing squats on that double suplex. That was cool.
Yes, that was good.
And I thought Liv Morgan had a good showing as well. I thought she looked really energetic in the match and everything that she did. So I thought like there was a few of them sort of really went for it. This was one of the matches when you look at the card that I sort of was least bothered about going in. Like, if we'd have done this like big preview and really gone into each match, this is one that we'd probably have spent the least time talking about. Mm. But actually, it was one of the ones that I really enjoyed on the card. And I thought they, like, I enjoyed it better than the men's one.
Yeah, I did. Because you had someone to root for.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people listening to this will be like, Lana's the worst. They shouldn't be doing anything with her. She can't wrestle, et cetera, et cetera. But I just don't buy into that at all. I see someone who's working hard. She's doing, you know, the best she can do with the skills that she's got. She's making a name for herself. And I'm invested, you know. Yeah, I want to see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully now we're going to see a really nasty Nia Jax because as a result of this, and not the mean girls Nia Jax.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Okay, main event time. Main event time. Drew McIntyre, Raw's WWE champ versus SmackDown's Universal champ, Roman Reigns. Oh, now this, I mean, 100% match of the night.
Yeah.
I thought these two had a blistering match. I thought it built and built into something really memorable, high octane, heavy hitting, violent at points. I just thought this was what a heavyweight championship main event should be. It had everything.
And I was so behind Drew. This is the importance of the storytelling. Like I was, you know, whatever time this was, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm on my own in the house on my sofa. And I was being vocal, like screaming at the TV, like when he would kick out after the spear or whichever it was. I was literally going, come on, Drew. Like I was shouting at the TV. I was so behind him. Like, I love it when I feel like that. I love it when you just completely forget that, you know, about the intricacies of the technique behind wrestling and blah, blah, blah. And you're just lost in the match, hoping that your champ is going to win. Yeah. And that's how I felt watching it. Like I wanted him to beat Roman. Obviously, if I'd have thought about it for more than 2 seconds in a different way, I know that Roman was going to win the match, but I was so invested in Drew winning. Like I really wanted him to. I was sat in my Drew McIntyre t-shirt, and that's how I like feeling when I'm watching wrestling.
Yeah. It was, I just loved it. And it really built into something superb. As I said, it was what a main event of a pay-per-view should be. Two warriors, 100% on the top of their game. Like, and I was thinking over the weekend, me and Tom Fordy were texting about it. And I think I put a tweet out as well. When you think back to the match they had at WrestleMania 35 in New York at MetLife Stadium, I was there, Tom and I were there. And I don't want to sound really sort of unnecessarily negative and mean, but it was dull. It was dull because it was Drew McIntyre hadn't found his feet. Roman Reigns was the same old Roman Reigns that we'd seen for years. And the story just wasn't there. So by the time they came to collide at WrestleMania, even though it was a big stadium and everyone's really excited, it just sent the whole stadium to sleep because it was so generic. Two muscle-bound guys just doing generic moves for too long, and it just wasn't a good match at all. Instantly forgettable. And it's incredible to think how much difference 18 months, because that's all it's been, 18 months and a good storyline. Not, I mean, there's not even a really strong storyline between these two, but it's real characters that you're invested in.
Yeah.
And it's incredible the difference it makes because these two put on an absolute barnstormer. And it was just, it was everything that wrestling should be. And it was, you know, Drew lost, but he was made to look $1 million in the process. Every single person involved won. It was just brilliant.
Mm. And I really feel that with Drew. Like, I feel like since he became champ, you know, since winning the Rumble, and then when that was like one level up that he moved, then he won the title at Mania and he moved another level up. And then he's sort of gradually been inching up throughout the year in terms of his status. And I feel like in the last month or so, he's become an absolute star. Like, he's top level now. Like, he's that guy. He's not just someone that, you know, someone like, and I don't mean this to be negative, because as we've said, wrestlers can improve. And like a few years ago when you watched that match, it was one thing. And now we're here at Survivor Series 2020 and it is a completely different level, because they improve as well as time goes on and they realize how to do it. But like, say, I was going to say someone like Braun Strowman holding the Universal title, that is the Universal champion, but that's one level of it. And the title comes off him again and you sort of don't think about it too much anymore. Then he's not really in the title picture. Do you know what I mean? But Drew is past that level now. Drew is like someone who will always be in the conversation of the title picture now.
Yeah. 100%.
Has to be. And I'm not saying that Braun Strowman won't get there either, you know, with time. He absolutely could. I'm just saying right now, Drew has moved to that absolute top level now. And like, he's so good. And I could not be more behind him as a babyface champ.
Yeah, it was so well done. And it just, it built and built and built and got more exciting as the minutes went on. And there were table spots and there were spears through the barricade. And there were kickouts when genuinely you didn't think Drew was going to kick out. You know, they just, they grabbed you by the balls in this one. And I was sucked in.
And I hated Jay when he came out. It made me really hate him. I'm like, no, you're better than, I was literally feeling like, you're better than this, Jay.
Oh, stop. You are hilarious.
Like, yeah, I was so angry with Jay when he came out. I think I even texted you. And when I was tweeting about it, saying like, here we go, main event, or, you know, something like that. Someone tweeted me last night, I'm all here for Drew, but shame that Roman's so boring and sends me to sleep. And said something like, he said something like, because I was like, I could not disagree more. He's unbelievable right now.
Yeah.
And a couple of other people were like, yeah, what are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. And then he said, nah, that even the whole thing with him and Jay on SmackDown over the last month or so, like, just made me turn off, boring. And normally I'm like, look, each to their own. Everyone's got their own opinions on things. You like what you like. But on this, I'm actually like, no, I'm sorry, you're wrong. You're completely wrong. And if you can't see the value in what Roman is doing right now in terms of wrestling and what pro wrestling is, you don't understand pro wrestling.
Yeah, and he has elevated Drew to the next level. I know Drew had the big victory over Randy Orton, and that was sort of one step in the process. But that segment he had with Drew on SmackDown when he was sat at the head of the table, he, even though his promo was about Drew being number two and he's not quite at the same level as Roman, through that promo, he brought Drew up to his level. So he's doing astonishing work, and the two of them, I mean, great chemistry as well. You know, you talk about them knowing more and performing better than they may have done 18 months ago. And obviously they found their feet in terms of their characters and things seem to be clicking, but you know, there are some intangibles there. You know, there's the chemistry, there's the timing, there's all the stars aligning to make this really special. It's an incredibly special time for Roman, as we know, but it's also a really, really special time for Drew. So,
And I also think, like, when Brock was champion, I used to think, you know, what was so great was like he was such a sort of unbeatable champion. It was like they built him to such a place where it was like, who the hell is going to beat him? Like when he's defending his title against Ziggler or whatever, you're like, there's absolutely no way on earth that Ziggler can beat Brock.
Yeah.
There was this thing that, even though it didn't always happen, there was this thing that, like, Roman is the one that is capable of beating him, right? There was always that sense that, like, Roman can beat Brock. Hmm. Now you've obviously had Drew beat Brock at Mania, but my point is, like, Roman is that now. Roman is that guy that, like, he's just not going to lose. And he didn't lose last night, but you did get the sense that if they were to meet again and without Jey Uso getting involved, it is possible for Drew to beat Roman. Drew is that guy that can beat him. So somewhere down the line, maybe that, you know, in way off in the future, there'll be something. And Drew is one that is capable. And I just think that's great. Like, he's still got the win, but like you say, Drew comes out of this an absolute star.
Well, this match was so good that it made someone tweet last night, the GP account, saying, it feels to me like these two could have what, you know, your Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens have, yeah. your Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart have, those feuds that just last entire careers. Yeah. You know, it could be always that we can, not constantly, but every now and again, we can always go back to Roman and Drew, and there can always be a great story to be told about Roman always thinking he is just a step above Drew McIntyre. Drew will always be number two because he doesn't quite have what it takes to be the legit face of the company. And I think they are so on that level now, these two, that you've got, you know, two legit main eventers. And I thought it just positioned them both perfectly, absolutely perfectly.
Yeah, just fantastic stuff.
What a main event. And then really nice moment in the aisleway where Jay, who had obviously come down when the referee was down and allowing... So what happened? Roman gave Drew a low blow and then Jay came in and hit him with a super kick. So Roman had help. And then in the aisleway afterwards, Jay was like, I've got you. And Roman gave him a hug. And so they were sort of united and just brilliant. Loved.
Just before the low blow, I literally went, don't stand there, it's going to be a low blow. I shouted it out. I was like, don't stand there, Drew.
You are like a kid watching WWE.
Yep.
It's hilarious. Speaking of which, that takes us into the final segment of the show, The Undertaker's farewell, 30 years to the day since he debuted at Survivor Series 1990. So we didn't know what to expect. As we said at the top of this show, expectations were through the roof. We thought maybe someone was going to come down. Maybe it would lead to one final match at WrestleMania. But what we got was... Shane McMahon, Big Show, JBL, Jeff Hardy, the Godwins, Rikishi, the Godfather, Savio Vega. So nice mentions of the Bone Street crew, the Undertaker's sort of backstage posse. And really nice that they mentioned Yokozuna, who was part of that gang, who's obviously no longer with us. Kevin Nash, Booker T, HBK, Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair, Triple H, and Kane. They all came down. And it was really reminiscent of Ric Flair's retirement in 2008, where you thought Undertaker was going to make his way down to the ring and hug all his friends, you know, great group of friends. And the commentators did a really good job of reminding fans of the history and the stories between these particular talents and Taker. But instead what happened is they threw to the video package that they played on the kickoff show. And then when we came back, Vince was stood in the ring. All the other talents had gone. Vince was stood in the ring, who is looking old, by the way.
Yeah.
He is looking a bit funny and a bit old. But that's how
old is he?
Say again.
How old is he?
He's just turned 70. In August, he turned, I want to say 74, but I might be totally wrong.
Right.
Looking at that. Oh, 75 this year. So he's looking old, but I'm only saying that because it's sort of testament to how long we've loved this and how long Taker has been going. You know, it's been 30 years. So he then does a bit of a speech and introduces Undertaker, just saying it's been 30 years, an unmatched career. There'll never be anything like him again. Long live the Undertaker. And then Taker comes down, really amazing theatrical entrance, as it always is. And Taker stands not with Vince in the ring, but on his own. All the pyros and the lights and the smoke were there. And then in a beautiful moment, and it really was touching, a hologram of Paul Bearer appeared on the ring apron, holding out the urn. Taker knelt before him with his head down. And I just, like, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It was a really, really beautiful moment, a really special way to say goodbye to The Undertaker and make reference to his friend, the late, great Paul Bearer. And I thought it was wonderful. It was such an amazing visual. But that was it, really. And then Taker did a very short promo saying it's time for The Undertaker to rest in peace. He slowly walks back up the aisle, and then the show goes off the air.
Yeah.
And that is Taker done. What did you make of the farewell to The Undertaker?
Well, yeah, I think the Paul Bearer moment was the best moment because it looked really cool. So yeah, that I thought that was wicked. This moment last night, I want to say it was slightly underwhelming, but I don't really want to say that because it's The Undertaker. He's given this amazing 30-year career for us, and it's just been like he's on my Mount Rushmore. I love The Undertaker, and to be fair, they've given us a month of Undertaker send off. This was just the end little bit of it last night. On the network, they've given us all this great content. He's done loads of press. I got to speak to him.
You got to speak to him. Yeah.
So to be honest, like if we're taking it in isolation, like the moment last night, not a lot happened. But to be fair, on the whole, 30 years of a career and then this month of send-off has basically been Undertaker month.
Yeah.
We've had an amazing time with it and with this character, and he's going to go down obviously as one of the greatest in the history of wrestling, which is amazing. And in isolation, all the guys coming out, I thought amazing. Look at all these brilliant legends coming down to the ring. The Godwins, I only just learned about the whole thing about their names, Henry O and Phineas I, being spelling out hog and pig.
Yeah,
like that's the first time I actually found out about that last night. But like all of those guys coming down to the ring, I thought this is amazing. I didn't know if like a few of them were going to say a few words, like if Taker was going to be there, even if Taker didn't acknowledge them, but just that if he would do his big entrance and they'd all just be stood around the ring, basically just sort of bowing down to The Undertaker.
Yeah,
I thought that would have been a nice touch. So I was slightly confused when after the package they weren't there anymore. It was like, oh, they were just got announced and then they went back to presumably play poker in that room and wait for Randy Orton to turn the light. So, it was all right. But I tripped myself up by getting my hopes up. So the one absence that I noticed was Stone Cold Steve Austin. So at that point, when Austin didn't come out, and Austin, he's done the podcast with him and stuff, and because The Rock isn't going to be there, but Austin could be there. So I really thought when Austin wasn't there, I was like, oh my God, in my head. And I was just waiting because he was taking a real long time down on his knee, obviously for the Paul Bear a bit. Then the walk back up the ramp, I was just waiting for the glass to break.
Right, okay. Oh, jeez. You really set yourself up for a fall, didn't you?
So I did trip myself up a bit, but that's my fault. That's not their fault.
I think when it got to that stage, I knew there wasn't anything coming. I just was, and the show was running over by half an hour at this point, and right. I knew that it was just going to be the farewell, and it was just going to be a nice moment that I guess Vince wanted and the Taker wanted and was happy to do. I think, is it a shame that on the way out, he didn't do something with a younger talent, or he didn't, I don't know, just set up something else? Yes, it's a bit of a shame, but I think we'll look back on this as a really lovely moment. As you say, it's sort of the culmination of a month, a month long period of time where we got some incredible content on the network. I think we'll look back at it really fondly, especially the Paul Bearer moment. But I don't know. It for some reason it feels weird that Taker's last match was with AJ Styles, It's I mean, that's amazing if you think about it, really. 10 years ago, you'd never think that that would be the case. You'd never even imagine AJ Styles in WWE. So yeah. it's very cool as well.
Was in front of no fans as well. Like,
yeah, and I think you really felt that as well. I think it was a shame, but obviously, you know, WWE can't be blamed for that. I think they certainly made the right decision to do it on the 30th anniversary. It made perfect sense. I thought it was really lovely. Very odd that all those other talents just disappeared, because the fact that we didn't see them even embrace Taker or shake his hand or give him a hug made it all seem a bit pointless. You know, I love the idea of knowing that they would probably all go for drinks after the show. You know, that's great. But I sort of don't know why they were there. Mick Foley, by the way, was the other one that I didn't mention. But yeah, it was good. It was great. And I do think it was a shame Stone Cold wasn't there, because he had so many great matches with Taker.
But we don't know his reasons, you know, in this time, you've got no idea why someone might not be there.
Like, but also, well, yeah, there's that. But also, would Stone Cold, as a surprise, turning up at Survivor Series, overshadow Taker being there? You know, with everyone else, it was a bit different. But someone the level of Austin, if he'd arrived, would that take a bit of shine off Taker? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe it does quite the opposite, and it's like, whoa, it's so special that Steve's there, and that's
But you know, like I say, like it wasn't the most sort of exciting moment in isolation, but I am not going to complain about what we've had from The Undertaker and, you know, WWE with The Undertaker. Like, we've had 30 years of incredible stuff and a month of appreciation of that incredible stuff. So yeah. I think if anyone's going, oh, well, that was this and that was that about The Undertaker last night, is slightly ungrateful. Do you know what I mean? If I was Undertaker, I'd be going, what do you want from me?
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, well, it's goodbye to Undertaker forever, and goodbye from us as well. Not forever.
But is it goodbye from the American Badass, though?
Oh, Kev, come on. Come on. You need to calm it. So what would you rate Survivor Series out of 5 stars? Tricky, right?
It is tricky. I mean, some amazing moments. Roman and Drew, and obviously it will always be famous for The Undertaker's last appearance.
Yeah.
But in terms of an event, probably a 2.
Oh, yeah, I was going to go 2.5. That's the thing. Like, the main event was great. We'll always remember Taker. But just for the sheer amount of stuff that didn't really matter, you can't really go higher than a 2.5, can you?
No.
But anyway, I'm excited to see what is on the horizon. TLC is coming up in December. I'm very much looking forward to more Sheamus Drew action tonight. I'm interested to see what happens there. So we'll break down Monday Night Raw on Wednesday. But Kev, where can people find you on the soche?
At Kevy Clifton, K-E-V-I Clifton.
Lovely stuff. And you can follow me at James Dilo on Twitter and Instagram. But more importantly, follow the show at WWEGP on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/GorillaPositionWWE. And subscribe to the newsletter. Simply head to, what is it? GorillaPositionWWE.com. Enter your name and email address. Takes 10 seconds and you'll be the first to be notified of any big GP news. Episode 300 is coming up in 5 episodes' time. Can you believe that? Gotta plan something, Kev. Right, thanks so much for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed Survivor Series, and we'll be back on Wednesday. Trent Seven will be our guest. He's going to be talking about the final, him versus A-Kid in the final of the Heritage Cup. That is coming up this week. So we shall see you Wednesday, when we'll be breaking down Monday Night Raw as well. From me and Kev, this has been a Starstruck Media production. We shall see you on Wednesday.